Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast. I'm one of your hosts, John Bruford. I'm joined by my more successful, taller, and probably more handsome co-host, Fintan Costello. Fintan, hello.
This is doing wonders for my ego, John. Thank you very much.
I didn't realize it was so fragile.
You couldn't believe it could get even bigger, is probably what I would have said. But the ego has landed.
Was that a Robbie Williams album? I think it was.
It was.
I saw Robbie Williams live.
Did you?
I did, yeah.
Is he good? I'd say he does a good live show.
He's very, very good. But there's something a little bit pub singer cabaret about him.
Well, that's part of the charm, isn't it? No.
Yeah, but I don't think it communicates well internationally.
No, it doesn't. That's why he didn't. He never did. He never got any traction in America.
Yeah, and I know I don't like to talk about it, but I saw Eminem play once, and
you've never brought it up.
The difference was phenomenal. I do remember watching Eminem plus Personal Friend, and thinking to myself, this is why Robbie Williams is never going to get on in the US, because he's actually not good enough.
Mm.
But I saw him on his first UK tour. There's this little music venue in Bristol, which I think seats about 1,000. And Angels hadn't come out yet.
Mm.
And I had a couple of mates who were living just outside Bristol. And I said to them, I just saw this little tiny snippet in the newspaper, little paragraph about his first solo tour. And I said, should we go and see that just out of curiosity? And they got the tickets that morning. And so we had second row seats, and it was an all-seater venue, 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very good. But I did this really strange thing. See, for those not in the know, Robbie Williams was one of the key attractions, you might say, in Britain's, probably Europe's biggest boy band, Take That. And he was a bit of a pretty boy, but his solo stuff was looking interesting, at least. And basically, there was me, my mates, Anna and Juliet, and Anna's younger brother, Ollie. And I'm pretty sure me and Ollie were pretty much the only blokes there.
Got it.
So, you know, the toilets were great, and they stayed clean and in good repair all through the gig, and there were no queues. but crucially, just before he came on, I thought to myself, I'm gonna experience something here that I've never experienced before. And when it looked like he was coming on the stage, I turned around and faced the audience so I would know what it was like to have 1,000 women reaching for me.
But it's a good point, though. Like, would his solo career have taken off if he hadn't done Take That? And he didn't have that kind of installed kind of fan base to back it up.
Nah, I don't think so.
Because he did the whole kind of bad boy redemption arc, you know, they all would just wanted to mother him kind of thing. So there was a whole kind of subtext to his solo career kind of kicking off, which, like, if you compare that to Eminem, who just, like, launched this, you know what I mean? Like, just as the, probably not a fair comparison, but, like, launching your solo career as a solo artist from scratch is very different than what he had. And a success outside of the UK or kind of core Take That markets. Like, Take That wasn't a big deal in America.
Mm. They did have one big hit in the States.
Did they?
I say big hit. It was a very consistent hit. I think it might have held a record for the longest time it took a single to reach the Billboard top 40 or top 20.
Mm.
But Back for Good was on the US charts for like a fucking year or something.
Mm.
And it is a blinding song. Even if lyrically it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. In the fist of separation, they're not separating the way I have. Jesus Christ. So there's a lot going on, actually, Fintan.
What's going on, John? It's the man with his finger on the email newsletter pulse of the industry. What's happening?
Well, I tell you what, this is the big thing.
Cool.
I think it's in the Times today. The Times of London. not the Daily Times.
Or the New York Times.
Is there a New York one as well? The white paper is going to come tomorrow.
No. They've been saying that for weeks.
Saying it for years.
Years. Well, no, but like...
I think it's plural now, yeah.
Well, it's been like, you know, no, it's this week for weeks now.
Yeah, but it hasn't been, but it's tomorrow now. Hang on, I got sent something by an industry source.
Ooh. Are you one of the, I'll protect my sources and go to jail for them kind of journal? Is that...
Yeah, I just don't want people to be embarrassed because they know me. Online gambling will face new curbs while rules for bricks and mortar casinos will be relaxed under government plans to be announced tomorrow.
Nice.
For listeners listening on Thursday, that's today. Yeah. On Friday, it's yesterday. Ministers will publish the long-awaited gambling white paper, which will include proposals for a new levy on gambling companies. Ministers hope to introduce the bulk of the reforms using secondary legislation, meaning they can pass without the need for votes in Parliament.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, we called it. We called it.
That does sound legit to me, that bit about the secondary thingy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because they don't want a big debate in Parliament. They just want to push this through and just forget about it as quickly as possible.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the part that makes me think, yeah, it probably will be tomorrow because it's got that layer of political deviousness about it.
Well, they don't want to make it the news. They don't want, you know, how politicians have voted on the gambling policy as a news thing or...
Yeah, why on earth should how our politicians vote be news to us? I mean, that would be awful.
It's the thing, right? They don't want to give Labour an easy layup for the next election.
I think my former MP in South Shropshire, I think his thing was... He was campaigning for cleaner waters in the rivers, and yet he still voted on the government thing to allow all that shit in UK rivers. It's like, make your mind up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, once they follow the party whip, any scruples they have are just, it's pissing in the wind. It's just nonsense.
But then that's just politicians, mate. Anyway. Okay, so it's a big week, so we need to prepare maybe a podcast or something for that.
We should certainly think. Well, it's funny you should say that, because
what have you got?
This is all gaming boardroom related.
Ooh.
So I've had floating for a while.
Love a floater.
we're doing an event. And the idea was, is when the white paper lands, mm-hmm. we will get this event together in a couple of days, and that's
nice.
It. So we're doing an event with Northridge Law and corporate law hotshot Melanie Ellis on the gaming boardroom, which will be free to access.
Nice. That's cool.
I think all you'll have to do is sign up as an associate member, but that's just so that we can send you the details for it and any other events or shit that we've got going on. It won't be spammy, promise. So that will basically, you know, I mean, people will be talking about this and people will be putting content out about this. But what we're doing is basically making sure Northridge Law has time to read, disseminate and understand it, and then bringing that breakdown and discussing the key points, basically. And it will probably break it into a few different sessions. Public holiday in the UK on Monday, so it will probably be Tuesday.
Which actually means like them dropping the paper Thursday, Friday ahead of the bank holiday weekend. It's actually, yeah, it is this week. It is this week. Because it's holidays and people traveling because it's school break, school midterm and things and all that kind of stuff going on and bank holiday weekend.
As I mentioned on the Gaming Boardroom newsletter yesterday, that, you know, I thought Friday might make more sense because most people will be just thinking about the long weekend then and nobody's going to kick off.
Everyone's going to be on a half day and be sitting in traffic heading to Cornwall or something. So that's the traditional Friday long weekend.
Yeah. I wonder if people in Cornwall ever just holiday to London on those days because the roads would be clear.
My sister lives in Taunton. And she just hates the bank holidays because it's just chaos on the roads. Just traffic everywhere. It's madness.
I nearly lived in Taunton.
Yeah.
Didn't.
So it's nice enough.
So the, but that ties in. Hang on.
Okay.
So that ties in with some other stuff because we've got our responsible gambling event next Wednesday and Thursday.
Ah, brilliant.
The thing about the RG event, apart from the fucking stellar talent that we've got in it, is I've had a couple of confirmations of some big names, which I'm very pleased about.
Lovely.
But also, it's how it's broken down, how it's broken down the pricing. So what you got is, you can sign up for 2 days of this RG thing. So Dr. Michael Auer from Necton is chairing a couple of sessions. A couple of sessions he's got with Professor Mark Griffiths of Nottingham Trent University, talking about some papers that they co-authored. We've got two sessions where they look at a paper in each session.
Nice.
And we've got, oh God, there's so much. We're looking at RG as a marketing problem. You know, is the problem in the branding?
I like that a lot.
Looking at the language of RG, is the problem the terminology?
Yep. Brilliant.
And friend of the podcast, Jamie Salzberg, is part of those two sessions. Because that's a big part of his,
it's
bugbears.
Yeah.
So we've got those two, and we've got, we've got things. But so you can spend, it's 250 quid for the 2 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can sign up for individual sessions, and they're £50 each, I believe.
Okay. Oh, I like that. I like just being able to, actually, I just want that one. And then that's nice. That's a good touch.
You can sign up to just have post-event recordings that you can access.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can access the 2 days plus the other two RG events we've got later this year, one early August, one in November.
Mm-hmm.
For the princely sum of £450.
Right. That makes sense.
But we're also about to start a special offer for memberships.
Ooh, go on.
So this is like, we're kind of ready to really go a bit nuts with this now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first year of membership will be £500. So you can sign up for 450, or you can add an extra 50 to it and access all the events through the year, including, you know, all of the live online events that we're doing. So we've got the cannabis and tobacco one.
So for the sake of 50 quid, it feels like a no-brainer, right?
That's the plan, yeah.
Nice. Good work. I like that.
And then it's my job to basically make interesting content for the year that will make you want to stay on. So we're doing that. So I'm pretty excited about that.
I think that's really cool. That's really cool.
But on this RG event, we've had, I had confirmation the other day that we've got present Shadow Gambling Minister Alex Davis Jones,
a
sitting MP in the government opposition in the UK. Mm-hmm. She's going to be on the opening session, which is about ethics.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I'm quite pleased about that. And as I said, we've got Dr. Al, we've got Professor Griffiths, we've got Maris Catania, who's a friend of the podcast. We've got Jamie Salzberg. We've got, do you remember Harp Edwards from Gordon Moody?
Yes.
We've got a session about women as problem gamblers and whether they need different terminology to suggest player breaks, whether the treatment needs to be different because of their historical social roles. And Harp runs the actual what's the word I'm looking for, Fintan? The actual, you know, thingy project for Gordon Moody in the UK, residential treatment project for Gordon Moody in the UK. And we've had her on a podcast before. She's absolutely terrific.
Brilliant.
And so
that's really cool, man. That's really cool. Oh,
and Judge Cheryl Moss.
Mate, you've got all the heavy hitters.
Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. I'm going to declare it now. It's already the best RG conference lineup I've ever seen. That's like, it's the who's who. It's brilliant.
You don't look at a lot of conference lineups for RG though, do you?
Not really. I'm not going to lie. But I've spoken to a lot of those people and they're all super smart and great at what they do. And that gives me full confidence that for not a lot of money, I could learn a lot.
That's not even the full lineup, but you get the idea.
I know.
That's just that's May the 3rd and 4th, next Wednesday and Thursday, and I'll be chairing all the sessions. I'll be moderating, so that'll be a disaster. So there you go. So we've got all that going on. Whew. See what I'm saying? And
despite organizing all that, you still had time for a podcast this week.
Yeah, and I'm still poor. How does that even work, Fintan?
How does the look? Create great content and the money will come, mate.
Who's on the podcast, though?
We have, and I'll tell you what I love about the podcast, right? Is we get to talk to a lot of different people from all over the world. And it's a lot of people, like I'd say nearly everybody on the podcast we've ever had, like 95% of them, I've never met or spoken to before the podcast. I think. And what's really fun was, I think you and Ron, our guest this week, Ron Atzman from Authentics, could be best friends.
Whoa. You mean like in Step Brothers?
I think there's a lot of shared common interests, and I think there's a lot going on there. But I also think, from a completely different way, me and Ron would be best friends as well, because he's such a cool guy, so passionate about what he does, and such an interesting story. And I'd say, like, off air, there's even more interesting stories, which are even funnier and better. That it was really cool. So we've got Ron on. Ron is the, and probably my favorite job title I've seen in a long time, active chairman. Mm. And as a fellow active chairman, I completely get the principle of what he's saying. very hands-on chairman. active chairman and founder of Authentics, which is a super smart firm, been around for years, that do document authentication, like ID verification,
KYC,
KYC, all of these things. So they're super plugged into the gambling industry, super plugged into the finance and kind of trading industry, but also banks, Ubers of this world, these kind of big fintech type stuff. So they're super scalable, work across multiple jurisdictions, very tech savvy, very cool company. Runs great, and it was a super interesting chat.
I wonder who they'd turn to if they needed to hire on the gaming side of the business.
Well, my initial thought would be my number one choice, which It'd be grs-recruit.com, gaming recruitment solutions.
I bet that is a hyphen.
And you know what happened last week?
No.
Me and Paul had a steak. Paul was in Amsterdam. He had a flying visit to Amsterdam. And I meant to take a selfie and send it to you, and I forgot. I got carried away by the steak. Paul came to visit. We had a great chat. He's a lovely guy.
He never comes to Prestine.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know why.
There's a coffee shop.
You'd, in fairness, you'd probably get him a better steak than I could, but you know your meat. Paul, so if you're looking to recruit in the gambling industry, land-based, online, anywhere in the world, building a new facility and need a squillion staff, or need a high-level executive or a board member or whatever it is you need, grs-recruit.com have got you covered. They can do that. And that was really fun. It was great to finally meet him. We've spoken a lot. Like, you know, we've spoken so much now, and we've never met. So that was good. But like, it was good that he made the effort to come over. Like, unlike some people I know who've never made the effort to come visit me. But you know.
Yeah, your sister never visits.
Yeah, just saying.
I assume
just
that's who you're talking about. I'm not even sure I can pay my rent next month. I'm not going to be. If I spend it coming to Amsterdam, I'm gonna have the kids in a suitcase.
Wow,
we don't. And I'll just be throwing myself on your mercy, saying, "Fintan, I've come to visit finally." Also,
we're hungry.
Do you have a shed?
So we've got Ron on the podcast, and we are proudly sponsored by GRS.
God bless our corporate overlords. Enjoy the episode. We join today's guest, which is the fabulously titled Ron Atzman. Ron's name is such so that you can distinguish him from other people whose first names might be Ron. Ron, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you very much for hosting me.
The pleasure is more than likely all ours. Ron, you join us from a company called Authentix. Did I say that correctly?
You did say it correctly. You won 2 points.
Sweet. 2-0, Fenton, huh?
Oh, it's game on. Exactly. It's game on.
The question, how high do we go?
There is no ceiling.
No ceiling. Okay. No. There is no, like in the game industry, how do you say, there is like no limits?
There's no limits and there's no floor. That's the problem.
I see. Okay. I can either lose the house or earn another house.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Keep things simple. We're very much a boom or bust kind of podcast. What does Authentix do?
So we are in the space of identity verification and identity management. So, I mean, like if you want me to tell you the full story, the short story.
Full story. Yeah, let's do it.
With all the juicy stuff as well.
Oh, that's what we're here for.
I see. Okay. So I'll give the... Okay, so... By the way, on the royalties, do we split it together later on when on the reruns?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, that does
you'll
actually...
get your percentage of fuck all.
Yeah. Oh, so it's what, 50-50, 60-40? How do we split it?
But actually, Ron, if Authentix wanted to become a sponsor of the podcast, because sponsorships are available, anybody that's listening,
they are?
Then that would be like giving yourself cash back.
That's not a bad idea. Okay. We can negotiate later on, like some sort of you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Sounds like nice.
We can sort that out. Good. So what's the full story? Tell us all about it.
Oh yeah, so the full story. We're not. I'll say this: we are not your typical company. So we are. We're not. I mean, although we still see ourselves as a startup, well, we're in like about 220 people now. But we actually started as a spin-off from a bigger company called ICTS, which is an airport security company. And what they do is they screen, the parent company screened passengers in airport for the last 40 something years. And inside ICTS, we have developed like 20 plus years ago, a capability to do ID verification Probably when you check into different airports and scan your passport, some of the components is us. Are ours. So that's when we started like many, many years ago. And then while we were doing some house cleaning at the company, it was pre my time, we found out that tech, and we actually wasn't really utilized to deliver revenue. So it was more of an added value service that the airport security done. And then the funny story is that the chairman of ICTS, who is also my dad, read an article, I think was in 2006, about companies getting fined for not doing proper KYC. KYC stands for Know Your Customer. And one of the reasons is to check your documents. And then he said, shit, we're barking at the wrong tree. So we started pivoting to financial service, but also into the gaming sector. In the late 2000s, that was early days. So and then we started working with some gaming players like 888 and Aspire Global and some other gambling operators and also some FX players, which is a bit in the same sector, and we started expanding our capabilities. So we don't do just document verification. We do biometrics, we do fraud prevention, we do age estimation, we do age validation. We look for different sanctions and PAPs. I mean, we give a full identity suite to our customers, if it's in the gaming space, as I said, or like in the payment space. Like we are also work with Paysafe, with Skrill, PayPal, PayU, and financial crypto players, Uber, Takeaway. So actually we are a bit of across the board in that respect.
Brilliant. So basically you've got a situation where I'm a gambling operator,
Yeah.
And I've got different levels of KYC, AML, source of funds requirements per jurisdiction. I call you guys up, plug in your API, and then I can basically just take care of...
Globally. So, you know, the funny story is you've been around for long years. You know that the U.S. was... there were a few big players in the early 2000 who were really like milking it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the U.S. operator basically shut it down. And basically there's no online gambling allowed. A company which will not talk about them anymore. And they were having a lot of fun over there. But then when they reopened the market a couple of years ago, you need to start getting licenses in order not just as an operator, but also as a provider to the operator. So we have already 6 licenses in 6 different states. And this is because we work with global operators and they want to go to the US because we provide, as I said, we do stuff in Indonesia and Australia and Japan and Africa and Europe and US. So the beauty of our system is that if you look, it's fascinating because I've been tracking, I think one of the first verticals I approached when I got into the business in 2008 was the online space, because there is you're probably aware in Israel, there's a lot of gambling tech that's coming from Israel, Playtech, 888. I think most of the operators have big centers in Israel to develop capabilities. So when I was looking to penetrate the market, I went to that market and it was very interesting that if you look, I've been tracking the gambling sector for so many years, it was very regional. So you had like only UK and only Italy and only and Germany, which is like its island on its own. And then you have the Nordics and then you have Spain. And what you start to see now is that there's a lot of consolidation. Gaming V, it's not anymore Gaming VC. They call them Envy then? How do you call them? The new rebrand of Gaming VC?
I'm not sure.
I forgot their name. It's one of the, so they merge and then you have Bwin. So basically everything started, so Europe started to consolidate. So you have only now like big European operators, but now also because when things are becoming even more regulated, then the margins are shrinking, and then you're looking to expand yourself in other markets. So besides going into Asia, which is still not so much regulated, the biggest gambling market in the world is outside of China is the US, and now when they're starting to relift the restrictions on the US market, our European customers are looking are crossing the Atlantic. And the problem is that there are very, very few ID players, ID verification players that are global. I think we're the only real global one that, you know, can give you multiple language if it's multiple languages, multiple countries. So I think we become a very good partner to these players that they don't need to start looking to a new vendor, and we can go with them to wherever they want, if it's New Jersey or Canada or Mexico or Brazil or China on the other side. So it's kind of quite interesting. So
that's really interesting, because I think, you know, we've had experts on for bonus abuse. So guys who help combat and detect like issues with slot games where there's exploits or bonuses that can be exploited and stuff. And so there was a really interesting case this week in the UK for Bet365. So a customer or a guy, he had over 1,000 accounts, 1,000 IDs, but he's gone to jail for it. So he's taken like 250-300K out of Bet365, but you would assume there's multiple operators.
Yeah.
So it's not just like one brand he's hit. But in the UK, it's the first time there's been a criminal offense for bonus abuse.
And I think like when you look at products like yours, it's really interesting in terms of, so my question would be like, how would a product like yours help stop this guy with 1,000 fake accounts?
Well, that's first of all, that's, you know, I tell to my kids every day, you know, I said, I'm not smarter. I just either I ate more shit or I'm more experienced. So first of all, it's fascinating. I didn't hear about this, maybe because I don't live as much as you do in this sector. We're a bit more
sure.
Cross vertical, but we actually started, we call it synthetic fraud. Okay. Well, basically what they do, what is synthetic fraud? Okay. That they use my face. Okay. So out of us three,
mm-hmm.
we can build at least 9 different identities. Why? Because they can use my face with your name,
yeah.
and John's address. And then we can start doing like, think of like, you remember Mr. Potato?
Yeah, 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 Mr. Potato Head, yeah.
Exactly. So basically from us three pictures, our listeners don't see it, but if you see, so think about like creating a Mr. Potato. So we have, so it's a 3x3. So from us three, we can create at least 9 different identities, combining everything. Now, the beauty of what we do is, and we, by the way, we start to see that in two sectors, payments and crypto. And not now, I'm talking to you about, when was the first time I started to see, I noticed synthetic fraud was 2016. And it was with one of our customers, it's a payment operator. And actually we came, and you think it came from like crazy, like third world countries. No. It came from it didn't come from the UK. Okay. It didn't come from the Brits.
Sure.
No, you're clean. It came from mainland. and we start to see like this pattern of like similar identities. Okay. But there was only like small differences. So this led, I had an idea already like 3 years or before that to basically build, like you have payment monitoring, mm-hmm. building an identity monitoring tool. So what we do with our Instinct, which is our identity monitoring, you can, we look at repetitions. So sure. How many times I've seen your face with a different name or my name with a different address or I don't know, or social security number. And it gives two things. One, it looks for conflicting repetitions, or how good repetitions. So I've seen you 4 times in 5 different sectors. I've seen you at 888. I've seen you at PayPal. I've seen you at Uber, and I've seen you at Airbnb. So it gives me confidence about you, how good you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, it can tell. Listen. You know, I started to see conflict on you, so we can use it for, you can either use, consume it as a closed garden just at Bet365 as an example. Mm-hmm. So we would like screen all of Bet365 in it and look for, you know, try to finding these connecting holes or connecting yeah. loops, or you can opt into the consortium, which is most of our big customers are doing. And then say, listen, I actually saw John, okay, with a different address, one time at 888 and the other time at PokerStars. Okay,
yep.
So that might erase, so it can help between like if they try to play to try to trick the operators or to try to trick between the two different operators or inside its own operator. Because listen, these huge massive operators now, Bet365, Betfair. What was once was PokerStars, and now it's like Flutter,
mm-hmm.
which is like a conglomerate, or 888. It's like they became so big. Okay, for example, Flutter, for example, they think what it is to integrate Skybet and PokerStars.
I'd say it's a nightmare.
Exactly,
it's just like exactly. some how, poor guy just sitting there crying.
Exactly. How hard it is. How do you bring these two huge companies with the, and how do you start consolidating it? Okay, looking for duplicates, good duplicates and bad duplicates. You want to consolidate, you want to clean the ecosystem. It is a real pain in the back. I can tell you this. I mean, we've done this. We are actually helping. We've been doing this with a bank in Europe, okay, that they've been doing acquisitions. And we basically clean, before they bring it in, we clean the customer base, you know, to see first of all there's consistency. And then let's start to see if we can match it to what they have existing and to see maybe those repetitions, good or bad.
Yeah. Because there could obviously be customers you don't want because they're politically exposed or they're a pip or a pep or whatever.
Exactly.
So does this relate then to, because I had a read through your website, you, and I love the concept of the reusable ID. Is that from the, so was the reusable ID from the customer's perspective or from the business owner's perspective? How does that work?
So when it comes to the reusable ID, that actually comes, that's another story.
Okay.
So if we can pause on what we talked about now and take it to reusable ID, let's talk about what is reusable ID. There's a concept in the world, okay, like let's talk, okay, the love and peace concept, okay? You know, no more wars, no more bloodshed, you know, everything is good. That we will own our own identity, okay? We will decide who and what we want to share with a company. Mm-hmm. If it's a gaming company, if it's a car sharing company, a home rental, or an Uber, or a PayPal, or NatWest, or the home office, okay? Or I don't know, or you want to go into Fabric, okay? And you just want to show you that you're over 21 and you want to have a drink. Fabric, by the way, if maybe we're a bit too old, maybe I'm too young. I mean, I don't know if people still go clubbing. Anyway, let's see how old is our crowd, okay? How back do we need to go? Anyway, long story short, so this is the concept of federated identity, okay? Mm-hmm. It is reusable, okay? And what do I and how do I set to reuse it, okay? Now, it's nice as a concept, okay? But unfortunately, I don't see governments. I mean, it will go to that path. I'm building that. Sorry for maybe I've a bit jumped there. But when you talk about reusable, we need to understand the basic fundamentals of owning your identity, reusing your identity, sharing. So we need to know where is reusable identity coming. It's coming from the user owning its identity. Okay, so that start. Now, in theory, it's nice. I don't see it happening because if you look what is the substance of a country has three core legs: land, currency, citizens. Citizens, the identity. By the way, why did Libra or Facebook was melted by the governments is because Facebook was looking to take away one of the three pillars of what constitutes a country, its currency. Yeah. So therefore, the concept of like of federated identity that the you, me will own identity will never happen because the government will never really let us have it. It's not conspiracy, it's nothing, it's what constitutes a country. Okay, but there's some place between they control it and we control it, and that's reusable identity, and the technical standards are just starting to be defined. You know, it's like beta versus VHS. You know, the video, mm-hmm. the video days. There's no immediate standard. It's going to be on blockchain, watch network. How we're going to do that? It's not clear. But the content, okay, we as a verify, we have verified you. And then you can take your credentials and lock it on your device. Okay. Yep. Now, if we have done this for 888, okay, And then we want to now, and I don't want to do a full process with PokerStars or with Bet365, okay? Bet365 can go and say, listen, I can, me as a user can say, listen, I've been verified by Authentics for 888. Is that good enough for Bet365? So it's already, it's a reusable by this. So that's the concept of making the life for the user much easier. Yeah. And on the other side, also for the operator, because it's, again, it's a lot of friction. You've been in the game, you know how expensive it is to onboard a customer. You know, sometimes he doesn't have his ID, his mobile's not working, it's not corrected. You know, the dog ate my lunch. You know, there's lots of excuses. So the concept of reusable by NUK is that is it was done once between a company and a verifier, which is a company like Authentics, and the end user, done, closed. Is that good enough to be used again with someone else, either in your sector or in another sector or for a different use case? So that's like a, it's still very early days.
Yeah, I was gonna
no
say.
Standards. Yeah. You know, is I'm just throwing name brand names, okay? But am I as Bet365 willing to bet and to trust 888 or PokerStars that they've done it in the past properly? Now this is a bit political games, you know. Do I trust their capabilities? So there isn't a standard yet, okay? And nobody says, "Oh, if I allow them to do that, I make their life easier." Then maybe they'll go bet in the other operator, and I'm going to lose. There's a lot of.
It feels like it's one of those that needs to come from the government down for it to work properly. Because like in the Netherlands or the Scandinavian, like Denmark and stuff, is good for this. There is like the Danish have NemID and the Dutch have DigiID, and so there is these like government, like this is you as a citizen.
Exactly.
And you can use that, but it's still not, it's not used as a KYC tool for third parties. It's more for just dealing with the government.
You know why? I'll tell you why.
Why?
Psychologically.
Really?
Because, yes. I mean, like I don't know, expose, okay, it's a few countries, because people say, I'll use my digital ID, my government digital ID, to log into the government services. I don't want the government to know what I'm doing when it has, doesn't have to do with the government. Big brother watching. So do I want them to know I'm gambling, trading, maybe watching a bit like over 18 movies? Okay. Well, yeah, exactly. No, so exactly. So, I mean, do I really, do I want them to know I'm like, I'm a big fan of, I don't know, a game, which I'm really, I'm gameholic. You know, it's a fear. Listen, the government, they should know the government. Okay. What I do in my own life.
That's fair.
It's my own shit.
So then do you think that then it's okay? So if you've got the government, so okay, that's like the reality of that's not going to work unless it becomes like forced. So then the next level down is kind of the quasi government. So the Apple, the Google, the Facebook, the TikTok type.
Like, do you think it's terrifying to describe commercial organizations as quasi government?
But look at Apple this week. Apple this week in the US have launched a deposit account.
Yeah.
That's paying the best interest, cash interest rates. On top of that, they've got buy now, pay later. Yeah. They've got a credit card service. To access it all, you need to buy an iPhone.
It's freaky.
And it's all done from their balance sheet. So it's not like, they're not like Silicon Valley Bank where they're taking user deposits to fund loans. They're just funding it because they've got so much cash. Like it's literally, it's unbelievable when you think about it. It's just so much. They've just got so much money.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying it's just a freaky thing in a conversation to think. I mean, imagine having this conversation even 20 years ago.
No, yeah. I disagree with you because there was always
General Electric was huge, right?
Look at Microsoft. Microsoft was the big demon. guys, every generation or every decade, we have, listen, Google was the darling in the late 90s. I don't know if you recall it, but it was Yahoo. I mean, for the younger generation, okay, I've been already around the block. I've been on the internet since 95. But, you know, Yahoo was the big evil, and Google was the underdog. And then Facebook was so innocent and beautiful. And now we have TikTok. And yeah, and Apple is a bit freaky. Listen, I'll tell you this. It is concerning. These closed ecosystems. I think if there's anything, I think that Europe is if there's going to be any challenges, it's going to come from Europe.
Yeah, we love fighting about shit.
I know. Look, you always loved wars.
We're just like, so what you say you're going to do something that's good for us? Screw you.
We had six wars. You had like World War One, World War Two, the Hornet Days War. I mean, there's like...
Yeah, we don't mess about.
Medieval Days. Yeah, you don't mess around. Listen, you do it big.
We have... You know, if we can't find somebody else to fight with, we'll have a civil war.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not proud.
No.
So, I hear you. Listen, I think with the KYC thing, I think the incentivization is there in the term. If you want to get people to use these IDs for KYC purposes, you got to incentivize them.
100%. The question.
But get them, but use the power of KYC, give them a bucket of chicken.
It's not a bucket of chicken, but I'll tell it differently. Your identity...
This is why he's the chairman, John, and you're not.
No. I don't like... He says chicken. I think I'm eating a menu of Kentucky Fried Chicken, which I look... I probably it's very nice, but...
No, I get them confused, KYC.
Yeah, exactly. So KYC, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken, it's for me, it's like immediately conflict. No, it's okay. It's totally okay. By the way,
I'm embarrassed now, Ron.
Not embarrassed. By the way, now I'm going to get some royalties. I love McDonald's and I love a good Big Mac. Okay? So there you go. I haven't been paid, but guys, do me a favor. When you do this, send this to McDonald's and ask for my rights.
So if you like a good Big Mac, the next time you're in Finland, you've got to go to Hess Burger.
What's Hess Burger?
Hess Burger is basically the local McDonald's clone. They probably won't hate me saying that. They're listening. But it is what McDonald's should be.
What's the difference?
It's a Big Mac, but it's made properly.
What does it mean, made properly? Defined properly.
Well, look, the last time I had a Big Mac, it was just sad. It was soggy bread. It was a little dollop of sauce. It was thin meat. It was just maybe your big McDonald's is better than my McDonald's, but
The question, where's your local McDonald's place?
Around the corner in Amsterdam.
You're in Amsterdam?
Yeah.
Yeah, but listen, Amsterdam, we know it's not that good. You need to go to the McDonald's on Baker Street.
Okay.
Listen, I have a sister. She lives in Amsterdam. I love Amsterdam. People are great, okay? But somehow the McDonald's in Amsterdam is a bit more drier.
It's horrible. It's not a fan. I'm not a fan. But Hess Burger, super high quality, brilliant. Yeah, but it's just basically five-star McDonald's.
Yeah, but I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because the McDonald's localize the Big Mac flavor to the local country. So probably in the Netherlands, you like your food that doesn't reflect anything on you as a person, okay?
That's okay.
Oh, it does that too.
Look, the Dutch aren't famous for their cuisine, let's be honest. This isn't...
They're not famous? Actually, by the way, I love you. I love your chips. I love your chips.
Oh, okay, yeah, fruits, mayonnaise, yep. Pub food, good pub food.
I don't want to insult John, listen. But also, England wasn't well known for its amazing cuisine.
That is true.
I mean, listen, I'll tell you a funny story. I was once, when I was doing a summer school in 88 in London, and I was starving to death because you get this pies. I mean, before like London became such a culinary capital, you can find anything. So in the like the late 80s and 90s, food was suboptimal over there. But I'll give you an example. In Israel, you know why I prefer a Big Mac in London than the Big Mac in Israel? Because in London, you fry the burger. In Tel Aviv, we grill it. It's different cooking.
Well,
that's interesting.
Yes.
We'll have to do a research trip, John.
No, definitely. I'm joining you.
We're going to need sponsors for that, Fintan.
I'm sure McDonald's will sponsor us.
I'm sure they won't.
Fintan, did I know how to ask?
That is true.
Fintan, did I ever tell you the story of my pissed up drunk KFC adventure in St. Petersburg, which led to my friend quitting smoking?
That one I haven't heard.
KFC in St. Petersburg.
Are you sure you didn't hear it?
Nope. It's a new one.
Okay, right. So I went to this party in St. Petersburg.
As you do.
There was a company that I did some work with for a little while, for just a short time, 17 years. And they like to keep their advertisers sweet, and you know, they were doing very well. And so they were like, oh, this company, they're having this party, they've invited you, so, you know, go to it. And I sort of did it with a bunch of other stuff. So I think I did something in Bulgaria first and then on to St. Petersburg, something like that. It was Unicom, it was the Russian gaming company when Russia was still open as a gambling market. And so I go to St. Petersburg. I had a horrible time getting there.
It's a beautiful city.
I know, I'm sure it is, but I wasn't there for very long. But the thing is, I was coming in to Sheremetyevo International, and then I had to transfer to Sheremetyevo Domestic, which is actually really far away. And I'd gotten some bad advice about my luggage, which in fact wasn't being transferred for me. I had to stop, get it, and sort it all out. So I got to Sheremetyevo Domestic, learned that my luggage was at the other airport, which is friggin' miles away. Nobody in the domestic airport spoke any English, apart from one guy who worked for a Swedish airline who just happened to be there. And he basically saved my life and my underpants because everybody else appeared to have machine guns. It wasn't going well. I was getting a bit more pissed off with each passing moment. It wasn't brilliant. Get to St. Petersburg anyway, get to the hotel, get on his coach to go to this party. All fine. Got shit-faced. Had some food at the party. It's really lovely. It was a great event. Wonderful. Drove past the Hermitage. Got to go there one day. I get back to the hotel, and for some reason, I'm drunk enough to have forgotten that I've eaten.
Happens.
So I'm like, well, shit, I better go get some food. So I go stumbling out into the St. Petersburg night, usual way, wallet in one pocket, book in my back pocket, all fine. And I see the lights of a KFC. So I go stumbling into this KFC. Usually you can like find somebody that speaks a bit of English, and usually teenagers, pretty good bet.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fucking chance. So I'm just pointing at stuff and telling them how many I want. And they're looking at me like, you can't possibly eat that much. And I'm like,
I can.
Just bring the food. And so I get all this, and I'm sitting down, and like, so I just to explain a little bit, I had previous to this, I've been sharing a flat with my friend Juliet, who's an old school friend, been friends for 35 years, something like that. I moved out and she stayed in Exeter, and she had this lovely old car, but the car, she reckoned the car meant that she couldn't quit smoking. It was an old, I might be remembering this. Oh no, that's the wrong car. But anyway, she drove to work. It was the drive to work that meant she couldn't quit smoking, right? Because on the drive to work, she would light a cigarette and traffic in Exeter was pretty bad. And she'd sit there and she'd smoke. And some days that'd be the only cigarette she'd have, but she had to have that one. And I'm sitting in this KFC in St. Petersburg and the solution comes to me. There are two girls sitting on the table opposite and one of them has a lovely pair of mittens that look hand-knitted to me. And I thought, if Jules had some nice driving mittens, she wouldn't be able to have a cigarette because she rolls her own, you see.
Oh. While driving.
And if she's wearing mittens, she can't hold the cigarette. So, drunk me.
I've got to call her immediately.
John, we need to drag you to Tel Aviv. I think it's going to be very, very, very funny to see you hanging out with us on a weekend.
This is why I don't drink anymore.
Yeah, he's really boring now. He's really boring.
No, Fintan, it turns out it wasn't the alcohol. It was me that was the important part of the recipe. So I negotiate with these two girls, teenagers, late teenagers. I negotiate buying the one girl's mittens off her, despite the fact they don't speak any English, and all I can really do is wave money at them.
You didn't get arrested.
No, I didn't.
I mean, just like shouting at these teenage girls and stealing
pointing,
mittens.
Pointing.
And my boobs. What are you doing?
I get. They figure it out, and I'm like, I'm like, yay, got these mittens, right? And everything's fine, and I finish my food. I thanks, bye, and I go away. And it's all going swimmingly until the next morning when I get up and I realize that I had literally cleaned out my wallet, given them about a month's worth of salary, and I didn't have enough money to get a taxi to the fucking airport.
Good.
But on the plus side,
how the story ends.
On the plus side, it worked. I gave Juliet her driving mittens and she used them for driving and she quit smoking.
Brilliant. I'm glad the two teenage girls made out like bandits. Right,
Yeah, they did great.
Brilliant.
It was 17 years ago.
Oh, it was. Do you know? It was probably only about 15 years ago.
Who's counting?
Yeah. For me,
Ron. I've got a question about affordability checks. So, particularly in the UK. There's the new gambling white paper, so the kind of new gambling legislation, and it could be dropping any moment is the rumor. One of the key things that's been proposed and talked about a lot is this concept of affordability checks. Yes. So are you as a player able to afford your gambling activity with this company or in general? It's obviously a sensitive topic because you've got to send bank statements and pay slips and stuff to operators and have it checked, and a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to do that, I don't want my bookie to see how much I earn. Exactly. Or my outgoings and stuff. Is this something that you guys operate in as well? No. Do you have solutions for this or looking
not at the moment? Okay, I must admit, I'm not into the details of this, and I think, gambling is a very sensitive position. Hmm. Because, you know, it has its upside, it has its downsides. Gambling is okay. Listen, I personally, you know, some people prefer going by clothes than gambling in that respect. The question is how it's gonna happen, okay? Yeah. And I think I think the regulator went one step too far. Not because I think it's just, you rightly said, people are more and more aware of their personal data, if it's like first name, last name, or the financial stuff. And as we spoke about the government EID, why don't they use the EID, the government EID, to log into to social stuff? You know, you don't want. I mean, like, as much as I feel very comfortable, I control my I'm telling you, I always look at it for my own personal, how would I behave? And then I also ask my family, my friends, what will they do? Not just in Israel, but, you know, I have friends in UK and US. And, you know, in this crazy world, you want a bit of intimacy, okay? You don't want to be totally exposed. Plus, you know, once, I always remind also my employees and my friends, once you send something, it's out, okay? There's no calling you back. You don't know where it's going to hit you. Okay, so I always recommend minimum exposure. Okay, not because you know, I don't believe that sharing is bad. I think because there are bad people that once they get the data, they will do like crazy stuff with it. So and the easiness of getting data. So. And I think the affordability is more, listen, again, I'm not that in the details, but it's has to be more of a credit check. Okay. And how much, so let me ask you, what does it mean to have the option to play? Okay. So if I'm making, let's say like 50 grand a year, who defines if spending $5,000 a year on gambling is good or not? What is the level of affordability?
Okay. Yeah, that's the big question, right? So, like, how do you make it? What's, you know, it's a bit like when it kind of feels like when you go to apply for a mortgage, right? You need to approve you can afford to pay back the mortgage, and there's enough money left over. So it does feel very nanny state. Like you can kind of see, like, okay, there's good intentions, but bad implementation.
Exactly.
Of like, where's the line?
Yeah, right. Yeah. But listen, let's give, you talked about the mortgage. That's great. Okay. So let's say, let's give an example. Okay. Let's say that you are a single guy. Okay. Mm-hmm. No wife, no kids. Okay. You earn 50 grand. Okay. And you're not a big spender. Okay. You don't go crazy restaurants. You don't travel a lot. Your shtick is to gamble. You like to gamble. So therefore, your free income is 20 grand out of the 50. So in theory, 20 is that stuff. Now, you can find another guy like John. Okay, he's a big spender. He likes going restaurants, parties, doesn't drink anymore, but, you know, do some other stuff, you know, take care of the girls. So, I mean, like, you know, so he's, so, and therefore he's on the same 50K, his free spend is only $5,000. So the question is, okay, what is that? Who defines it?
Exactly.
Who makes it? And it makes it, now, if you do a mortgage, it's a one time. Okay. So you go to the mortgage and then, and it's a, but on gambling, every time you want to deposit, okay, am I eligible? Okay. What has changed? I think. Again, from the information I have, and I'm telling you, I'm not as educated as other people and knowledgeable. It looks, I think it got from a good place, okay. But I think the what will happen because of it, it will create more. My gut feeling, more damage than help.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay, well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for that. Wonderful. Well, I think we need to stop there. Ron, you've been wonderful.
I don't want to keep you too busy chairman anymore. I'm but a humble.
He's definitely peon. More active chairman than I am, but that's, you know, that's okay.
I'm very active, guys. Listen, you know, unfortunately today, I only leave the office at 7 o'clock.
Half day.
Yeah, he means 7 a.m. He means he left the office hours ago.
No, 7 p.m. My friend.
You can't see the golf course behind me.
I'm in the office. You can see my table, my Snoopy doll, my Star Wars dolls, everything, you know, Boba Fett.
There's a lot of Star Wars. There's two Boba Fetts.
I can show you. I have a lightsaber. Yeah,
he's got all the toys.
Listen, you spend so much time in the office, at least enjoy it.
Make it comfy. I agree with that.
Just one last quick question then. What's your favorite Star Wars film?
Return of the Jedi. Oh, no, you don't like it.
John's not a fan.
How old are you, Ron?
49. I saw all of them, by the way. Why? What do you think? Come on, John, bring it out. I know you're... Come on, let me help you. Well, what's the problem?
The only sane answer is The Empire Strikes Back.
Well, I want to tell you, I was debating between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, but I'll tell you what the story. The end of The Empire Strikes Back is a bit depressing, okay? And
did it hurt your feelings, Ron?
No, it didn't hurt my feelings. What you said or the movie?
The movie. It's a bit too
sad. Listen. At the end of the day, there's enough shit outside in the life. I don't need to see movie. When I watch something, I have no life. For example, I don't mind killing. You know, in the movies like John Wick is John Wick is like a great movie, like lots of killing, but it's always given with a positive flavor. Okay, at The Empire Strikes Back, you know, Luke Skywalker loses his right hand, and what's his name? Harrison Ford gets freezed. And you know, it's like it's a bit too dark. It's a too dark ending. And I'm a positive guy. I don't like. I know that I can take negativity, but you know,
that's okay. Are you enjoying the Mandalorian TV series then?
It's nice, but it's very commercial.
Fun. It's fun, right? It's kind of it's a John it's a John Wayne TV show set in space.
It's okay. Listen, it's fun. There's the Star Wars cartoons, which my daughters, they love it.
The Bad Batch. The Bad Batch. I watched that with my son. It's fun.
Yeah. So. By the way, I have posters. What are you kidding?
Oh, he's got everything. He's got everything. Oh, here we go. Look at this. Wow.
I have a lot of them. So
hang on. If you're that, so it's a bit, little tiny bit younger than me. Did you see Star Wars, the first movie? That was the first film I ever saw at the cinema.
Yes, that was the first movie I was taken. Yeah, of course.
So I was 3.
Yeah, we're about the same age.
You're a little younger than me, and I'm going to take that seniority just because you're in a busy and important
I'm a bit younger position. Than you. How old are you?
How old am I? I'm 48.
So I'm 49. I'm older than you.
No, you're not. You're only... actually 47.
And this is why?
Just because I said.
And you said you know, if you're the, you know what, let's do this. If you choose my age, can I be back 29, please?
Yeah, like wiping.
Listen, God, can you do me a favor, God? Can you make me 29 again?
Look, I don't make the rules.
You don't make the rules, you just made them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I did. I mean, technically, I do make the rules, but not when somebody calls me out on it. Then I'm like, well, it's policy, mate.
The computer says no.
Yeah, nothing I can do about that. It's just, it said 2 years.
This isn't your passport. Sorry, mate.
It's like when I met Fintan at ICE, I was like, the first thing he said to me was, I wish I was a bit taller. And I'm like,
tough luck.
I can't do anything about that.
Tough luck.
Policy.
Brilliant.
Just gonna have to use your hair. Ron, thanks for joining us. Fintan, do we have any further questions? Like
no,
Kevin Costner films, cake.
I love Kevin. By the way, Kevin Costner has a very few very good movies.
Go on, what's your favorite?
Yeah,
of Kevin Costner. Oh, well, I won't say The Bodyguard because it's a bit too cheesy. But
it's my favorite.
It is?
Yeah.
But, you know...
It's too cheesy.
It's so cheesy. But the one... There is a very good one is the one that he's the coach on the drafts.
Are you talking about draft day?
Draft day, yes.
Wow. See, I was underwhelmed by draft day. I was actually disappointed by it.
Disappointed? Why disappointed?
It just, it was a little bit too by the numbers. It didn't really have a lot of heart. It didn't go anywhere unexpected.
But that's the game. That's exactly the thing. It's a numbers game. It's like the other game of the other movie with Brad Pitt when he is a football coach.
Moneyball, the baseball.
Moneyball,
coach.
Exactly. Yeah. By the way, Moneyball was a great movie. Listen, there's like I can tell you this. I stopped reading books because I read too many contracts, so I can't read anymore. But for me, movies, it's like you know, like for example. What's your best Jean Reno movie?
Wow.
Oof. I'll have to Google
okay.
this.
That's a tough call. There's a big part of me that wants to say The Big Blue.
Nah. The Big Blue is like very like plain vanilla. I mean, like everybody likes The Big Blue.
That's a lovely film.
It's a bit too long. It's a bit too long.
I went to see it at the cinema and I thought it was going to be a lovely clean print and it wasn't. It was horribly degraded and it looked shocking. It was actually a better experience on video.
So I'll tell you, I'll get you off the hook. My favorite movie of Jean Reno, okay, is Leon.
Yes, that's the one I was trying to think of.
It's a terrific film in a lot of ways, but it's not even Luc Besson's best.
I'm not talking about Luc Besson. I'm talking about Jean Reno.
No, I know. But there are movies where Jean Reno is terrific, but it's not a terrific movie. He's great in Godzilla. He's really good in it. He's really funny.
The Fifth Element, the Samurai. There's some great. I mean, there's Luc Besson is a great. Producer, I mean, like in that respect. I mean, listen, for me, movies is like, I mean, it's great. I can watch movies endless.
But Luc Besson's best movie, just for the record, is, and I'll argue this to my dying day, but I shouldn't need to argue it because it goes without argument.
Yes.
Is Nikita, aka to international audiences, La Femme Nikita.
Well, it's a good.
Oh, Ron disagrees. Here we go.
It's a good action movie. It's a good. I liked it. It's a good action movie. I don't know. We can debate it.
We should probably leave it there, Ron.
I think we're gonna.
We can finish it over like.
You're gonna have to come back for a movie episode. I think is what I'm hearing here.
Listen, we can do movies, we can do concerts. Okay, we can do games.
I think I'm about to be replaced as a podcast host because you're just listing off John's favorite things here.
I can tell you,
New best friends.
I went to see Depeche Mode in Manchester. In New York, Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
Easy to confuse the two.
They're so similar.
Yeah, I was saying Manchester. No, because I spoke with a guy earlier from Manchester. I said, what Manchester? It's Madison Square Garden. So Depeche Mode, and then Bruce Springsteen at Hyde Park in July. He's coming to London. And then what else I'm going to see? This is really old. It's very cheesy. Guns N' Roses, they're coming to Tel Aviv.
Nice.
Yes.
It's good to see they're still alive.
After you rehab. Tell me. That's not a problem, I'll tell you why. Because if you see how old the Rolling Stones are still alive after the amount of drugs they've taken in their life. Rolling Stones has at least another, not Rolling Stones, so Guns N' Roses have at least 10 years to hit the road.
Depends if Fat Axel comes back.
He is back.
Yeah, but it depends if Fat Axel comes back. Not Axel, Fat Axel.
Who's FedEx?
He got massive. Axel got, he got, he was like, it was like he'd swallowed himself and he was trying to escape from the inside. He got so big. And it's like, if you're going to do these 2 hour plus shows, you've got to be in shape. And Springsteen is actually a great example of that. That guy is super fit.
Yeah. But also Mick Jagger. You know who was, by the way, I saw on her last tour, she was super fit and she was like the queen. Tina Turner.
Really?
She was 3 hour concert at the O2, eight different costumes, not a single break.
Wow. That's impressive.
Wow. I'm telling you, she's the queen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Ron Atzman of Authentics, thank you for joining us on the Gambling Files podcast. We shall see you.
It was a real pleasure.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.